The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
As we see some movement at the takeoff zone, it's Kelly Slater grabbing rail. A clean entry, this thing holding open, it spits.
When it spit me, I thought it was going to spit me off my board.
Comes out with the spit, spits him out. Comes out after the spit, gets spat out of another good-looking wave here.
Spit, spit, spit.
We're just spitballing, right? Yeah, I got it. Yeah, God. Welcome, everybody. If this is, this is Spit, and this is the Spit Podcast, where we basically talk about surf and surfing and all things surf. My name is Scott Bass, my co-host, my good friend, David Lee Scales. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Scott Bass. Looking dapper today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
As opposed to other days when I don't look quite as dapper?
Entirely, yes. That's exactly what I mean.
I have a dirty shirt on.
I know. Well, I hit you at the last minute, right before you were leaving the house, that we have a professional photographer coming to document this episode of Spit. And strangely, you and I both chose polo shirts. Why? What
Believe
does that
me,
say?
My look is dorm room floor. Whatever I grab off the floor is what I put on. The only thing I put on was the hat when I heard there was a photographer coming.
Which is a good looking hat. It's smart. It's boardroom show branded. So
yes.
People will get to see that.
Yes.
But the polo shirt is a funny choice. Do you wear polos normally?
Yeah.
I mean, you golf, right?
Yes. So, yeah,
okay.
I play golf.
Gotcha.
I do wear polos. I have more polos than t-shirts.
Do you really?
Yeah.
T-shirt is my uniform. I wear black and I wear white and that's it. So this is a perfect opportunity to advocate or to ask for clothing sponsor. We could use a clothing sponsor on this show.
We could.
They want to see us in things other than t-shirts and polos.
Yes.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say there's this really smart podcast I've been listening to that I want. You might already listen to it. Wouldn't surprise me if you do. It's called Recode Decode. Are you familiar with this?
All the time. Kara Swisher.
Yes. I just found it. So okay. I'm like bubbling over. I've been listening to them all and stuff. So
the problem is I hate Kara Swisher.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What is it about her that you don't like?
I mean, she's
kind of condescending. She's
super condescending. She's super stuck in her ways.
Yeah. I kind of like that about her. I'll tell you what I like about her most is the pace of the podcast is fast.
Yeah. Yeah. She steps all over her guests all the time.
Yeah.
And she has interesting people. I mean, she's had Mark Zuckerberg. She's had Elon Musk. And she'll ask Elon a question and he'll start going into it. And then she just jumps right over him. She has a bunch of sayings as well that she always relies on. She'll interrupt somebody and then go, but go ahead. But go ahead, meaning like go ahead and restart what you're saying. But she uses it 13 times an episode. You know?
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah. Sure, we have our own little.
I get emails about the things that we have all the time. But so what's interesting, and I've thought about her in relation to what you and I do here, and it is that I hate listening to her. It's like she's good enough at, or she gets good enough guests and she's knowledgeable enough to where information does come out. And even though I don't like her, it almost compels me to listen to her. Because I don't like her.
Wow, I hope people aren't listening to us because they don't like us.
Dude, I think the vast majority of Tom Likas's audience, a lot of Howard Stern's audience, hate listened to them.
I don't even listen to Stern anymore. Wow. You know what happened? Well, I got a new truck and I didn't resubscribe my Sirius. But I have Sirius in like three other cars. So I have the Sirius app on my phone so I can listen to Sirius through my truck through the app. But I'm just kind of over Howard Stern. Like it's not, I don't think it's him. I think it's me. I think I'm just grown out of like fart jokes. You know what I mean? Like
well,
I'm kind of over it.
Interestingly, he has too.
Well, I agree. But then like he's
so
always.
Then what's the value?
Well, he's pushing his book.
Yeah.
That too. What's the value? That's a great way to look at it. And so he's trying to become this like great interviewer guy, and I'm not sure he's the greatest interviewer. I mean, he's okay, but
well, I think his value as an interviewer back in the fart joke days was he would just straight out ask somebody about their sex life.
Yeah.
You know, and then that person, whether they engaged or not, like, that was just interesting. Nobody else was really doing that.
Yeah.
There's an element about Howard Stern that I do like, though, which is he's honest about his own stuff. So even yes. though he's poking fun and asking other people, he's talking about how small his own penis is, you know, and things like that. So there's nothing that's really off limits for him. And so, and even now, I think in this phase, even though he's not talking about crass things, he's opening up about going to therapy. He's opening up about cancer scares. And
he's been talking about therapy forever, though.
So that's my point, is that throughout, whatever he was talking about, it was always honest.
Yeah.
It was always, and there's something endearing about that honesty.
Yeah.
So
he is super honest. There's no doubt about it. The one thing, like when the whole Artie Lang thing happened, though, there was like this Artie moratorium, you know, like you weren't allowed to talk about Artie.
Right.
And it might have been for legal issues. And I'm sure they had a bunch of really good reasons that superseded anything that the audience might have wanted, any talk about it. It was probably they were generally concerned for Artie's welfare, and there's no reason to talk about him because it could only do harm.
Right.
But that's the one big black area in the Stern sort of, you know, the lineage of his show, where you're like, God, they really, that was not allowed to be talked about. And
yeah.
when this show has always been about complete honesty, and every scab was exposed and explored, that one kind of didn't get.
It's interesting. I wonder.
And again, they might have great reason. I mean, somebody you love is committing suicide or has a drug problem. It's like probably in their best interest not to continue poking it.
I know. It's so ugly that I don't know if there's any good way to talk about it.
But, yeah.
I mean, you're right.
So close, right?
You're right. There's plenty of other examples where the ugliness didn't bother them.
Right.
So it's odd that that one does bother them, but I still do feel like it is ugly. And yeah.
I know. Didn't Artie Lang just, did he die?
No, he's still around. Didn't he try to commit
suicide again or something? Or
I don't know. I don't know the timeline of, but yeah. He's,
I think recently something else bad happened to him, but anyway,
I don't know that he's ever fully kicked his addictions.
Yeah.
He plays a really solid guest star role in a show called Crashing on HBO.
Hmm.
Pete Holmes is the lead. He's like a stand-up comedian.
Hmm.
And Artie plays Artie. So Pete like meets him in a club in New York, and Artie like lets him come crash on his couch, but is just a complete train wreck, of course.
Yeah.
So I always like Artie.
I think, but it's gotten too sad. Like it's gotten so too sad. Real. It's kind of like, dude.
Yeah.
The fun part of it's over.
Yeah. For him too.
Yeah.
By the way, shout out, needessentials.com, spyoptic.com.
Of course. Everyone needs essentials, and we get our essentials from Need Essentials. Is that a new tagline I just made up?
That?
I did. I just made that up. I just rolled.
Impressive, dude.
Thank you.
And then Spy, of course, is doing the Surfrider membership giveaway for the next few days through the month of June. So if you buy a pair of shades or goggles on Spy, use promo code podcast and you will get a year membership to the Surfrider Foundation, free t-shirt, and yeah.
David, which former world champion said this? Okay, this is a quiz.
Okay. CJ Hobgood.
Which former world champion said this? As a kid, I was an anarchist. I believed no god, no master, no ruler, the right of self-determination, and that if you broke things down into smaller and smaller bits, people could make decisions for themselves so they don't need to be told what to do by a governing authority or a corporation with commercial interests. You know, so I've always had that. That's my core principle at heart. That's where my value for freedom and respect, and those things come from, you know, because we live in a society that's becoming ever more and more controlled by bigger forces than the individual. I believe in being able to be you and just let people be.
Is it a male or female?
It's a male.
The anarchist thing initially made me think Martin Potter, but the whole philosophy, life philosophy, makes me not think Martin Potter.
Why? Could Martin not get that deep for it?
I don't know. This is a great little quiz. I don't know.
All right. Well, Stumped. Let me break the silence here. Barton Lynch.
I I almost thought Barton for a second.
Barton Lynch, and that's sort of our segue into the Oi Rio Pro.
What's the confusion about that?
I just thought Barton Lynch is our commentator.
No, your look on your face.
Oh, I'm not sure if I pronounced it. If I pronounce Oi Rio Pro correctly.
Yes, you did. Yeah. That's how you pronounce Rio.
So, Barton Lynch, he's been getting a lot of feedback as a great commentator. And I think he is one. This is an interesting quote from him, right? It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
Mostly that it's so intelligent. You
know? He's intelligent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's very intelligent. But there was some blowback regarding another commentator, Brad Bricknell. Your thoughts on Brad Bricknell, who's getting a lot of flack on social media.
I don't know what the flack is, but I did not feel whatever it is. I didn't really sense any of that. Like, it was all positive. Whatever I felt from him was positive.
Yeah.
I like him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I'm the same way. I was surprised that maybe it was just the vocal minority.
What was the feedback?
The feedback was that he went on and on too much. He felt like he had to say stuff that could have taken 5 seconds and he made it last 30 seconds. That kind of thing.
Job, right?
I guess. Yeah. Again, I didn't notice it until I read about it. You know, I didn't think he was bad. He's the South African guy, right? Yeah.
Yep. And was he filling the shoes of Joe Turpel in this event?
I believe he was.
Partnered with Potts?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he was a nice replacement for Turpel. I mean, Turpel to me, a lot of people like him, and he's very reliable and predictable, and he certainly knows his stuff, but I don't love his energy level. Like, his energy, it feels a little soft to me. You can't excite the guy, you know? And he's always kind of got the same exact emotion, no matter what. So I thought Brad, not that Brad is different in that way, but I did like Brad as a replacement for Joe. I don't know.
Breath Fair enough.
Fair I love enough. I love Barton, though.
Yeah, Barton Lynch does a good job, doesn't he?
Yeah, love Barton, and I love Luke Egan. Sad that he wasn't there.
And no Rosie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a bummer.
Forgot about Rosie.
You did?
No. I would never forget about Rosie.
The other one must really be.
So, no Rosie and no Ronnie Blakey either, actually.
Right.
Which is also...
That's a bummer.
Yeah. I wonder why they have a different cast. It seems like in Rio every year they do have a different cast.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not positive why that is. What do you think? People go, I don't want to go.
I think so.
Yeah. But I'll say this. The last 2 years, we constantly just immediately go, oh, Brazil's lame. Like, I immediately go, oh, the Brazil event, it'll be lame. The last 2 years have been really good. The year that Wade Carmichael won it, right?
No, he got second to Felipe.
Well, that's basically winning it.
For Wade.
For Wade.
To win.
And then this year, both times at that right. That right's a legit fun wave to watch, and it offers opportunities in the barrel and aerial opportunities, and it's got a pretty demanding end section, and I think it's a pretty good event. You don't seem to
I agree with everything you're saying. It's just the event doesn't run there throughout the whole event. We get one and a half rounds at good Barinha, which is the name of that spot, and when they do that, it's awesome. Like, if we could run the whole event in those conditions,
why wouldn't they? Because their swell's not permitting, I guess.
I think, well, first of all, it was pumping for 2 days before they moved the event. Those first two rounds when they were running at Saquarema.
That was horrible.
I mean, the whole area is Saquarema, but they were running at Itaúna.
Yeah.
The mushy left.
Yeah. That's a horrible way.
It was pumping down the beach.
Oh, dude. Was it?
Yeah. I'll send you free surf footage. Jake Patterson was posting some of it. It's freaking pumping, dude.
Do you think Jake Patterson posting that it was pumping affects the decision that's made by the commissioner to move the event?
No.
And then why wouldn't they just have the event where the waves are perfect? They can, not perfect, but much better.
Great.
Just by looking to your right.
We need to hold them accountable for that. They ultimately did move the event, but it was like on the third day of the waves kind of pumping over there. And it was midway through the day. In the morning, it was offshore and pumping. By the time the event turned on over there, the wind shifted onto onshore. And which still, it was exciting to watch. You know, there is a thrilling aspect to it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the ideal conditions for Barinha, and Barinha had been pumping for the last 2 days. All that said, yes, I agree with you. It's an exciting wave to watch. I like that it's quasi-closed out, you know, because you have to really know how to navigate that lineup, which obviously Felipe Toledo is the best at doing. The unpredictability is exciting. There's real consequence. I mean, people are getting swept down the beach. They're breaking boards. The jet skis have a hard time getting him back out into the lineup, all that sort of stuff. So if they could run there, again, fewer surfers would allow them to run an entire event there. That would be worth doing. My issue kind of with Rio as an event, it has like a identity disorder. You know, like we don't know what Rio we're going to get. When we go down there, you and I don't know. Whereas if we go to Tahiti, we know we're going to get barreling laps. You know, Rio, it's kind of like...
Yeah, it's a wild card, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it going to be 1 foot mushy beach break or is it going to be barreling right-handers? So...
Well, the last 2 years have produced...
In one and a half rounds.
Yeah.
Per event.
But it could have been more if it's as simple as Pat O'Connell simply looking to his right and going, hey, it looks better down there. There must be some politics to this. And I know they looked to their right and saw good waves and went, yeah, but you know what? We got to do it here. We're set up here. And the cost of moving, is it worth it? And what about the wind? And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is that. It's logistics.
Yeah.
Logistical issues, whether politics or maybe they thought it wouldn't be good there for 2 days. It would only be good there for 6 hours.
I think they need to be more... They need to be more sprightly. They need to be able to jump and move quicker. They need less logistical headaches and hurdles, don't you think? Like, it seems like as we move with technology, we're moving forward. Is their operational base 10 years old as far as their hardware and stuff? Like, can't they be a little quicker to, hey, let's just go over there. All we got to do is move the judges, the surfers, and a couple of cameras.
They need to be a speedboat. Right now, they're a cruise ship.
It's hard, I guess, with all the computers.
No, but I think you're right. I think it's realistically one thing we've advocated for in the past is we don't need judges on site. The judges can be remote. So if you set up
right? That's awesome.
Right?
We don't even have to fly to Brazil. We can judge right from here.
Perfect. We don't.
I know.
Because that's the other disparity is the judges are subject to all the energy on the beach.
Right.
You and I, the vastest viewing audience is online. So what you and I are viewing, you and I have a consensus about. What they're experiencing is slightly different, and those scores are difficult to reconcile sometimes when you're online watching, you know?
It's like dropping a bomb from Vegas on somebody in Afghanistan via a drone. You can just do it from Vegas.
That was a macabre example. But
yes. Yeah, I mean, point is, technology allows us to just sit here and judge. We don't have to go to Brazil.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, thank you.
That's got to make Elo light up a little.
It's not Elo's job.
No, but, I mean, whoever's putting together the budgets, I mean, that's going to save some money.
So HQ can be remote for all of these. And when I was thinking remote, I was just thinking off the sand of the beach. Like, it could just be tucked back into the hills or wherever.
But I suppose, once
you're going remote, you might as well just keep it in Santa Monica. And then, so what are the things that you actually have to move from one roving venue to the next?
Cameras. Surfers.
That's it. I mean, the locker room. Not the commentators don't even need to be there.
No, the commentators don't need to be there, but they kind of do for...
The roving commentator.
The roving commentator kind of needs to be there. You could get away with just a couple of commentators. A couple of roving commentators, and then the box, so to speak, you know, the plywood box where they all sit and talk, that can be in Santa Monica.
Completely. One-time build-out, and just keep using it. So the other thing is that conflicts with the WSL's business model is they're trying to build all these fan activations on the sand.
Oh,
you know, so that people come and have like a live experience.
That's fine. Guess how you can afford to do that by not flying your whole crew out.
Yeah, true. But does that create less?
Do the fan
engagement in general?
Do the fans want to see and talk to Martin Potter? I think they do. I think that on some level, those broadcasters are part of the fandom.
You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're excited cross paths.
They're stars. I think if you see Jim Lampley or Jim Nance or Mike Tirico, you're like, oh, the guys, that's the announcer guy, you know, and you want to hobnob with them. They're not Lance Armstrong or they're not like Tiger Woods or whatever, but.
Yes, that's all true, but you don't go to the event to see that person.
No.
If you run into them at dinner, you're excited.
But when you think about it, Martin Potter's a former world champion. Barton Lynch, these are former world champions. These are still surf stars. It's the Joe Trappells you don't necessarily care about hobnobbing with. But if you see Barton Lynch, you're not going, oh, I'm hanging out with Barton Lynch, the commentator. You're like, I'm hanging out with Barton Lynch, the pro surfer.
Yeah.
So in that way, he is a star.
Right. Yeah, I just don't think it drives fans to the events.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I don't. That's just like an added benefit that they happen to be there. You're really there to see Kelly and whoever, Felipe and
all
those guys. So Kelly got a ninth. Last time I talked to you, I said a ninth in Brazil is a win for Kelly Slater. He's still in the hunt. And you agreed. You said, yeah, ninth would be okay. So we got to where we need to get him.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. You're bored with talking Kelly. I can tell. And maybe it's boring.
No. I think it's a hot topic.
There's way better storyline.
No, I think it's a hot topic because he's 47 years old. You know what I mean? Aside from the 11 world titles and stuff. But I don't know. He didn't impress me.
Yeah.
One thing I love about Kelly is he adds a drama to everything he does. So there's waves, like, for example, that double overhead free fall drop.
Insane.
But he added drama to that. Like, honestly, I don't know that he needed to airdrop that. You know, like, there's probably, like, a hesitation in the past. Like, knowing he's like, oh, shoot, I'm kind of on the shoulder. I'm not going to get super deep. So I'm going to just, like, feather in, paddle into this thing, free fall drop. And rather than tucking in immediately, it's like, skirt around this, come right up in it. It's blowing spit, so you can't really tell how deep he is. Reality wasn't that deep. But there's an optical illusion happening, and then he comes out dramatically, and it's like, oh my gosh. It almost looks like a 10-point ride unless you really analyze it, and you're like, it's a 5-point ride, you know?
But it's a 10-point ride in that it was probably anyone else, it would have been a 5-point ride, but he made it a 10-point ride because he did all of those things. Like, he has the ability to go, you know what? Watch this. For me to make this wave worthy, I'm going to have to do this, so I'm going to do it. Like, he danced, you know, and certainly he danced better than most.
Yeah. I like the drama that he adds to it.
Me too.
But I don't feel like necessarily... He's hanging in there. I got to give it to him.
He's hanging in there. Yeah, What's he got? He's got like a bad event. He's got a throwaway and
He has two throwaways already. That's why he had to go to Rio.
Ninth isn't a throwaway.
Nope.
Oh, he already had two throwaways. Gold Coast and where else? Sorry. Felipe Toledo was the guy that
Gold Coast, and it had to be Bells then. Because he performed at Margaret's and Karamas.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So he had to go to Brazil, and he went to Brazil. He got the minimum required, which was a ninth, which he's got to feel pretty good about.
Yeah.
I think
he could be proud of that.
And we go to Jay Bay, where he could win.
Totally.
No, he could make the semis.
It's the side of his injury, though.
Ooh. Great storyline.
Mental PTSD. Little scar tissue.
Right.
So
John got injured. Philippe was on form.
Here's my question about those two.
Okay, go ahead.
Felipe looks unbeatable. Right?
So unbeatable. It was ridiculous.
But John can thread the barrel better than Felipe. And like that kind of closeouty kind of wave, John could have absolutely, I think, contended with Felipe had he not been injured.
Totally.
Unfortunately,
agree.
The final day, the waves got smaller and barrels weren't really the scoring maneuver. But I think John, had he not been injured, is the one guy who could have gone toe-to-toe with Felipe.
Yeah, I agree. That was disappointing for everybody, and not the least of which John himself, disappointed that he hurt his knee, right?
Yes, and for listeners who weren't following that event, we're not sure how severe it is. It seems to be just kind of a re-triggered ring of the previous injury, but he could just be back at J-Bay. He just wanted to not push it harder at Rio. What do you think about the potential rivalry between Felipe and Kelly? Starting at Karamas, they had the super heat together, talking crap about each other. Prior to the heat, Kelly beat Felipe, and afterwards, Felipe walked up to him and says, you got lucky. And then they got repaired again, or rematched up here at Rio, and Felipe beat Kelly. So now they're 1-1.
I love it. You know me. You know that I'm going to love that. And I think we need to know more about it. Is it sincere or is it manufactured?
I don't think
Do they like
hatred.
Each other? Are they going to be bros? Are they going to have dinner together?
I think Kelly sincerely wanted to trounce Felipe and Karamas. And Felipe sincerely was pissed that he did. And so Felipe brought it back at Rio and smoked him. And now Kelly's got to be feeling the effects of that.
Good. So we need to...
We are.
We need to, yeah, we need to keep the special sauce flowing here.
I don't think they hate each other. You know, it's different than Andy and Kelly, like, wanting to.
This is where we need to step in. We need them to hate.
Yeah, I agree. What can we say? Let's start a rumor.
Hashtag Kelly hates Felipe.
Kelly said something.
The best hashtag would be something like Felipe has Kelly's number. Like, we got to make Kelly get, like, Kelly's going to be the one that we need to get angry. Like, Felipe, he'll get saucy.
What if they link up at match up at J Bay, where Kelly has such a long storied history, but really Felipe is the guy.
Felipe has the best wave ever, maybe. The
best wave ever. So how would it be to see those two guys late in the event?
That would be sick. Well, let's hope. So are they sick. Still on the opposite side of the draw?
I have no idea.
How did that? Well, we'll figure that out.
I don't even know how the draw or seating works anymore.
I don't either. I don't even know what heat I'm watching. Is this an elimination heat or a seeding heat? What does all that mean?
I know.
Why not round one, round two, round three?
It's going to go back to round one, round two next year for sure.
But you're right. My feeling was Felipe is just, when he's in that rhythm, he's unstoppable. His surfing is so, he's so on top of his board and just so, like, he's like a video machine.
Yeah,
he is. Is that a thing? A video machine?
No, it isn't.
Video game. Yeah. I used machines back in the day. I just aged myself. Let's go play the video machine.
He was that Atari?
Hell yes. Pong.
I had Pong.
There was like Pong with a bong.
Were you? I was too young for the bong.
I'm just kidding. Point. Me too. I was just horrible. I can't believe you said that.
Who's you?
You.
You're the one that said that. What are you?
What's happening here? John got injured.
So I don't know if you remember that. I think it was the heat. Yeah, it was Felipe versus Kelly. Felipe's first combo, first wave that he comboed. It was like a big snap. Kelly was paddling out. Bottom turn, boom, big air. And that air rotation, it normally would have been like blow the tail out, land backwards. He did a full rotation. Like, the whip in the spin was so fast that I watched it and I go, if Connor Coffin would have done that, it would have been a 10-point ride.
Yeah.
No questions asked. Like, yeah. Judges wouldn't have even thought about it.
Yeah.
But Felipe, 8-point ride. Just because we know, that's in his bag of tricks.
Yeah, it's weird. You've been making this point for years, and it's so valid. You know, like, how can that not be a 10-point ride?
That one air in particular. And, of course, in the context of the wave, but that one rotation, I'm just like, it is so sick. There's nobody else doing it that fast.
Ilo did that at Karamas. Was it Karamas? No. Where was it? Where did they have that event where Ilo did that super fast?
Duramba in the final.
Yeah, Duramba, exactly. Yeah. That was boom.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a problem for me that the judging needs to get kind of sorted out with.
They need to move the judges to Santa Monica.
I like it. Yeah, they should. What about your thoughts on Gabriel Medina? I thought he looked very human in this event.
Yeah, I think I watched the quarterfinal heat. I didn't watch the semi where he lost. I watched the quarterfinal heat. I forget who he surfed against, but he surfed pretty damn good.
Did he even make it that far? I don't think he made it into the semis.
I didn't see his last heat. I saw the heat before his last heat.
Gotcha.
And
he finished fifth, so quarters.
I was expecting him to be in the finals, frankly.
Completely. Like, I feel like in the past he's looked like a Terminator. Like, he doesn't fall, he doesn't make bad decisions, he's all over the lineup, he looks robotic. This event, I feel like he looked human. Like, he was making mistakes, priority mistakes. He was falling occasionally. You weren't sure if he was going to make the heat or not, you know? So I'm curious about that. And I don't think – I read somewhere he might not even have, like, a title hope at this point. Yeah, if he didn't – it might have been Stab was running some statistics. They were like, if he doesn't win the event, he's basically out of the title race mathematically.
Really?
Because he's that far. He's had that bad of a start this year.
Wow.
But he's in the past, he's come back to win a bunch of events on the back end. But I think John has such a big lead that it's difficult at this point. But I'm curious how much of that is a reflection of all of his extracurricular activities.
You and I have said that I think if he doesn't, I think the number was like 5 world titles. If he doesn't get 5 world titles, it's a disappointment. How many does he have? 2 or 3?
2.
You put a number out there that made sense. I forget what it was. It was
has to be more than
three, I think, is what you
Mark
said.
Mark Richards and right. Mick Fanning.
Yeah, it has to be five world titles, yeah. right? Because he has the talent.
Right.
And this is the year that he needed to just slam home a world title as sort of like a working man's world title. Like, just win another one and get moving on to your number five. You know, you got to
John.
You got to bang out a couple of where you're just like, do you even remember Kelly Slater's seventh world title?
No.
But that's my point. You got to like hammer down a couple so you can get to number five and get to that year where you're like, I'm going to a place where only a few people have been, you know, more than four world titles or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so he's falling off. Like, he's kind of just doing this like another sophomore slump, you know, like, anyway, it's disappointing.
Kelly was uncontended for a lot of those years, uncontested. Unfortunately, Gabriel's got five guys who are legitimate world title contenders. So it's a harder job for him. But I'm wondering how much of it is a reflection of the fact that he has 7.7 million Instagram followers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a legit number, dude. I mean, Kelly has 2 point something.
Yeah.
John has 1 point something. You know, none of the females have anywhere close to that. I mean, Alana Blanchard has 1.8 or something.
You actually know how many Alana Blanchard has?
Yeah, I keep up on the optics for everybody. Okay. But you know what I mean? Like, he's a legit, legit celebrity and living the lifestyle of a legit celebrity. And how does that not affect and kind of diffuse your interest in winning world titles? And like I said, gorilla stomping people's throat, you know?
Yeah, I guess it does. You know, and I can see how that could be a force that could sway you from, you know, your true mission, you know, a celebrity instead of a surfer, you know, like, which are you? Are you a golfer or are you a surfer?
Right.
Are you a celebrity or are you a surfer? You know, you gotta focus.
Yeah.
And I don't think, obviously, Gabe doesn't seem to be focusing this year, and it's unfortunate.
I wonder if that's what it is. I mean, it seems to me that that's what it is.
Fair enough.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Back to the commentators for a second. We got an email from Ross. Well, we'll just call him Ross C. I don't know if he wants me to use his last name or not. He's asking about why are there no women commentators in the booth? And certainly you could have them throughout the entire both men and women's event, but certainly in the women's event, there should be a woman's voice.
Well, Rosie wasn't there. Rosie's the... Who are you suggesting? Lane Beachley? I think Lane Beachley would be good.
Yeah.
She would bring some spit, so to speak.
Yeah.
Some fire.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Lane Beachley in there.
Yeah.
But she probably scares the crap out of the WSL, man.
Why?
Because she's going to speak her mind, man.
That's what you should want.
Well, I agree.
Yeah.
That's what you would think. But I'm just saying that, you know, she's going to... I think she secretly feels, maybe not secretly, but I think she feels underappreciated by the WSL. I mean, here was the problem, right? She won, I think, six world titles. She never had an opportunity for everyone to go, wow, Wayne's won six. That's going to be hard to do. Like, immediately, Steph Gilmore had eight, like, within 2 years of her winning six. Like, you know what I mean? There was no time for her to kind of relish and marinate in the love of Lane. You know, it was immediately, all energy was on Steph. There was no more talk of Lane Beachley.
Yeah.
It was just Steph, 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 Steph. And then Carissa, you know. So I think because of that, and again, I'm just assuming a hell of a lot here, which is really what the name of the show should be. It should be called Assume. that there's probably some ill will, maybe. She doesn't feel like she got her just. And frankly, maybe she hasn't. You know what I mean? But I would love to see her in there. I think she would be good because she's very well-spoken, super articulate, has world experiences, six world titles. And I think she would call it as, it wouldn't be all, you know, butterflies and unicorns. You know what I mean? It would be like, oh, she dug a rail. She shouldn't have done that. That was a big mistake, and it's going to cost her. And her coach needs to get his ass, you know, right. Or something, whatever it is.
Right, right, right. Yeah, interesting. I like it.
Speaking of coaches, where was Felipe's dad?
I didn't see him.
I heard that Felipe's dad has like some visa problems or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm hearing some rumors that there's.
Like, oh, do tell.
Felipe camp is a little bit amiss. Well, wow. I'm not sure exactly what it is. Again, this is all kind of like social media fodder that I'm picking up on, you know, like that's on the radar kind of, little small blips. But you didn't see Felipe's dad there. And some are arguing that he's not there for a reason because he's not a good coach. It's been argued that he has ruined heats for Felipe by calling, whistling the wrong waves. I think that happened this year, I recall. Maybe it was Karamas where he was whistling or something and Felipe didn't take a wave. And then he's like looking like, there's no more waves. What are you whistling for? You know? And then I also heard there's some visa issues perhaps that he couldn't get a visa into Brazil, which seems odd, right? But because they've got like a American sort of like work visa here that's probably good for 6 months. And because of the Trump administration, maybe there's some issues there. Again, all fodder. None of it verified.
I wonder also how long you can actually travel the world with your dad in your corner coaching and being your confidant before that relationship goes sour.
Especially after you win an event in your home nation state without your dad there. I don't really need you. There was some talk about his dad blowing some waves for him at Pipe too last year. Again,
yeah,
more stuff that I read online and just kind of went, I don't know. Maybe this is true. Maybe it's not.
I mean, Kaloe figured out early on that dad can be there, but Snips is the coach.
Yeah.
Because it's too much pressure.
Yeah.
And it's really not fair to your father-son relationship to test it in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like reserve the relationship for the father-son dynamic.
Yeah.
Don't need to add that layer of complexity to it.
LaVar Ball, Lonzo Ball type thing.
Yeah, totally. And it's like that income from the athlete is probably covering. I mean, when you look at Felipe, it seems like he's traveling the world with 10 of his family members. They're all moving to San Clemente, you know, not just he and his wife and his kids. It's like there's aunts and uncles that are moving to San Clemente. So there's so many people that are reliant on this one athlete's performance and income and all that sort of thing. It's a tremendous amount of pressure.
I'm sensing a documentary in about 10 years, you know, like La Familia. That's what it's going to be called, which is Spanish, not Portuguese, which wouldn't make sense.
What does it translate to?
The family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's going to be about the downfall of a potential world champion because of the good deeds that he and the family that he took upon his shoulders.
Yeah.
He's really got aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters, and they're all moving to here to eat Jack in the Box?
Pedro's, for sure. I mean, that's what it looks like to me. And it's not just what it looks like. I'm pretty sure that's been documented over the last couple of years.
Well, we love Felipe Toledo, and we want him to do well. I'm a big fan of his.
I mean, I'm a huge fan. His surfing's unreal.
Yeah, and he's a good human being.
Is he?
Yeah.
Seems to be. Started a family super young.
Yeah, you should try that.
Too late. I've already aged out. Another comment from Ross that emailed. He said, what do the WWE, MLB, NFL, and tons of other sports organizations get correct? Entrance music. how to integrate pop culture into the viewer experience. When will we see Chloe walk out to Cali Love or John John to Go Go Godzilla?
Great point. I can't believe that's been overlooked, and that needs to happen, you know, and that shouldn't be that hard to do. And oh, by the way, I mean, I wonder if you can program music from Santa Monica too. Like, how much of this stuff can you just do from Santa Monica?
More and more nowadays.
I bet you could program a playlist that plays on the beach in Brazil from Santa Monica.
Imagine,
like, the whole production facility could be from Santa Monica.
Their walk out from the locker room to the water's edge is exactly like the WWE.
Totally.
There's fans. They could just put a big backdrop back there.
Somebody could turn off the lights.
Yeah. And then spotlight them. And totally just start playing the music, and they come out. They could be wearing a robe. Like, for sure. They could play it up completely. It's a changing poncho.
Yes, they need maybe, like, and one of them could have the belt for each event.
Why would they not?
I know.
You know, it's a great idea. Like, if you're really going to play up,
you should.
Yeah.
Walk out with the wife, you know, like, kind of like the WWE always has a chick involved.
Totally. And then push her aside with, you get to the bikini throngs. What about, what are your thoughts on, okay, two people that I want to hear your thoughts on, Jordy and Chloe?
Jordy could win a world title, right? Don't you think?
Heck yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if Jordy's going to win a world title, this could be the year.
Yeah.
John John's hurt. The whole thing with
John
Jordy,
John's not out, though.
No, he's not.
He'll be back for
Jordy. And I doubt Jordy will win the title, by the way. But the thing that's interesting about Jordy is the whole, hey, he's not traveling with anyone. Look at him go. He's under the radar. You know, all that talk that we heard this week? It's true. And I think as soon as he brings his entourage, it may or may not be a problem.
Hmm.
Traveling solo, just traveling like he's traveled when you were 18, just you and your boards and a couple of bros. You got your own rental car, and you're finding your own way to the beach, and you're not dealing with the kids and the wife, and blah, and we got to get a coffee, and run to the store and get the Band-Aids and blah, 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 or whatever the hell's going on. He just flew under the radar, and he surfed great. He looked great. So it was obviously a plus event for both of those guys. Kolohe surfed great. I just don't think, you know, I mean, he made the semis, right?
Yep.
That's pretty good.
Super consistent.
He's still in number two, probably number one or number two now.
Still in number two. John John's still in first.
He's kind of under the radar. In a weird way, Chloe's kind of under the radar. It feels like every time I go into an event, I'm thinking John John Florence. I'm thinking Idola. I'm thinking Gabe Medina. I'm thinking, okay, these are the guys that are in the – it feels like they're the ones that are wearing the yellow jersey or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not thinking. I don't even know who's in third.
Felipe. He went from sixth to third.
So that makes sense. But before this, even before this, like, you're thinking Felipe. You're always thinking, who's going to win this event? Felipe, Idolo, Gabe, or JJF?
Yeah.
Everyone else is like, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Sebastian Zietz, yeah, he'll make the semis. Maybe. I don't know.
I know. So what's interesting is Kaloe's consistency this year.
Which is great.
He has won 17th, but that's it. Like, across the board, he's just making semifinals after semifinals. And I think that's what's lacked from him in the past. And he's been I think it's a reflection of making smart decisions. You know, you see him just posting a pair of sevens every heat and not really giving up, like, not making priority mistakes like he has in the past. There was one heat in this event where he was somebody else, I forget who, came out and, like, got a 9-point ride right out of the gates. And you're like, oh, this is where Chloe falls apart. You know, nope. Post a seven, post another seven.
Yeah, the heat? I remember that heat. I'm trying to remember who that was.
He seems unflappable. Like, he's got his confidence locked down, where he's like, I know what I can do. Really, every wave on tour, Chloe can get two sevens at. You know? Maybe Chopu and Pipe are the
question
marks.
Was that like Peterson Cristiano or somebody that was in that heat with him?
I don't remember.
You know what also feels like is that everyone, and you'll hear this on the broadcast, and I think there's this subconscious sort of momentum for when he's going to win his first title, right? His first event, you know, when he's going to win his first event. And everyone's kind of, it almost feels like we're all rooting for him to just get the monkey off the back and win an event, for God's sake. And as soon as that happens, one of two things is going to happen. The floodgates are going to open and he's going to win a bunch more, or he's going to, like, just go, finally, I did it. My career is done. I'm capping it off with one tour victory and that's it.
You know?
So it's going to be one of those two things. But based on the fact that he's getting a bunch of seconds, that he's got this consistency, like you're speaking of, you feel like as soon as he wins one, he's going to win a couple more within the next, you know, a year or sooner.
Yeah. I like Jordy. So the difference between the two, Kolohe, I feel like, isn't the best on tour at any one thing. Like, he's kind of a lesser version of Felipe's approach, basically. Whereas Jordy, I feel like, and then, so another
I kind of feel like he's a lesser version of Canoa.
That's what I was just going to say, too. Canoa's right there with him. Canoa can do all the same things. They have the
same body type.
They approach every wave the same way. Yeah. Blow out the fins. Yeah. Great form. Great style.
Felipe's a little more sprightly.
Yeah.
A little more unknown.
Right. So you look at Kolohe and you're like, well, what are you the king at? And not really anything. But he's good at a lot of things. Canoa's the
king of this.
Mental.
Yeah.
Yeah. And heat strategy.
Yeah.
So Jordy, on the other hand, is a king at power. He's the king. He's got, like, I mean, even airs, J-Bay, linking turns. Like, Jordy, when he puts it together, is beyond reproach with a lot of things.
Yeah.
Problem is, he doesn't always put it together.
That's the thing, right?
And he has holes in the game. His backhand and big barreling left reef breaks, basically, or his holes in his game.
Yeah.
And
his mental.
Probably, his mental approach. That's true. Yeah. It's exciting to see him hit the water because you know he is the best in the world at these couple of things and that he can potentially post 10-point rides. Whereas Kolohe and Canoa, they don't. Lots of eights, you know, maybe a nine. But Jordy, I feel like that highlight. And so that, I think that is the difference. You are expecting that exciting surfing to come from those other guys you named. Italo, Felipe, and those are the guys winning events.
It'd be interesting to see how many tens Jordy has versus Canoa and Kolohe. That'd be an interesting stat.
Canoa has zero.
For them to put up. I'd love for them to pull that. Yeah. Maybe you already have.
No.
Get on that.
Okay, I'll work on it.
Actually, Sam, right?
Yeah.
Sam. You're our stat guy.
You updated him to producer today.
Yeah, what's the guy's name on Rogan?
Jamie.
You're our Jamie.
speaking of Rogan, did you catch the Bob Lazar episode?
I don't. I'm like you. I'm kind of off Rogan because there's so many good podcasts out there that unless I hear from you or my son or somebody like, oh, you got to listen to Bob Lazar, I won't listen to Rogan consecutively.
I'll tease it. You decide whether you want to listen.
Okay.
He worked in Area 51 on UFOs.
I do want to listen.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
The dude is a very credible source, and he's been telling his story since the 80s, and various outlets have been following him, and he's been vilified by a lot of, you know, whatever, government agencies. Yeah. Like his entire academic record got erased. His birth certificate disappeared, all this stuff. but everything that he's talked about has been verified because there was news stories written about him at the time. And you can go into the archives and see that this physics, you know, whatever.
Is he a smart guy? Does he come
super smart and super humble and low key? But somebody made a documentary about him recently, and so that's why he's on Rogan talking about the documentary. But I mean, so much of what he says is credible. There's other stuff that you can't really vet out, and you got to take it with a grain of salt. But dude, it's fascinating.
I want to listen to that. And along those lines, you may have listened to the Recode Decode with Jim Sciutta from CNN, who wrote a book called Shadow Wars. Did you listen to that one?
Yep.
About the satellites in China and Russia and all the hacking and
yep,
just the crazy. Basically, it's a cold war in the stars. It's happening right now as we speak. No one even thinks about it.
Yep.
China's got the satellite that can have an arm reach out like a grappling hook and take one of our satellites and crush it.
Yep.
They've developed this. And this is pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, fascinating.
Anyway, oh yeah, we're a surf podcast. Puts it into perspective, doesn't it? New California state legislation is being drafted to characterize wave pools as wave basins, not traditional swimming pools or water parks, thereby easing filtration regulations that, as they stand now, would raise the cost significantly and basically make it unbusinesslike to open a wave pool in California. And lo and behold, KS Wave Company is the one working with California State Legislature to develop these new safety standards and regulations. They are saying that the size and volume of their wave basin, not a wave pool, a wave basin, because it's so large, it's not fiscally feasible to pump and filtrate and sanitize and return all of that water multiple times a day back to the basin. They go on to say that their wave generating technology generates enough turbulence and mixing of the water that this enhances the circulation anyway, and there's a disbursement of the sanitation treatment, which is already placed in the water. What? There's sanitation treatment in that water? Plus, they don't have quite the bather load that a traditional state's, you know, county, city swimming pool would have.
Meaning fewer people?
Right. They have a much bigger area with fewer people, so they don't need the sort of the state code now. So they're creating a new bill, making it a wave basin. Some developers are a bit put off, wave pool developers, that they weren't included in the drafting of the bill, as there are pools that are smaller and therefore are falling outside of this new bill's policy, forcing them to be labeled as a water park or a swimming pool, and therefore having to deal with the more stringent water filtration and sanitation requirements. The bill will more than likely have revisions as we move forward, however. So the hope is that all these wave pool developers get together and go, hey, Kelly, since you're drafting this policy, maybe get us involved in this so we can all reap the benefits, not just you. And I don't mean Kelly, I mean KS Wave Company.
Yeah.
And so that is what seems to be happening, is that this is just the first round, the first draft of this policy, and that all of the players in the wave pool market are going to get a chance to chime in on this. But, of course, Kelly's pool is the largest, and so they're the ones saying, hey, you got to be at least this big to get around to these swimming. If you're the size of a swimming pool, you're the size of the swimming pool. Like, it's not our fault you didn't build your wave pool big enough. We're drafting this legislation so we don't have to adhere to these swimming pool policies and regulations, yeah. or we'll go out of business. Are you fascinated by this, Dave? I can see.
I wouldn't use the word fascination. I think there's an element of interest. I trust that they're doing the right thing, I suppose, is what it comes down to. Like, it probably deserves a different designation than an actual swimming pool, but and I trust that also they're not trying to get sued by somebody who dies from a brain-eating amoeba. So they're going to do the level of cleansing and filtration that would keep their clients safe, lest they be sued. But yeah,
they've got, I think, to this out. Kind of protects them too. I mean, I think that if they get legislation that basically says, "Hey, look, we don't need to have filtration or sanitation because our pool's huge and we don't have very many people in it, and we already have a system in place that
moves water." Yeah, they just have a lesser around. Degree of filtration, not no filtration.
Right.
Yeah, and it's understandable that would be cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
Like, that pool is giant.
It's huge. It's huge. I was just up there.
I was not to cut into your story, but I wanted
That's
to hear about
story.
It.
My story's over.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Surfade Cup at the Surf Ranch. I was there on Friday. We spent the day. It was insane. We raised money for the Surfade mission, helping poor, impoverished, underserved communities and villages near regions where you and I and Sam surf all the time. Indonesia. And now, Surfade, by the way, full disclosure, I'm on the board of directors at Surfaid. We have raised $200,000 on Friday, and we raised money. And we have two new programs in Baja, so we're pretty excited about it. One of them is to help local Mexican kids that don't have access to good health care. And another one is a food bank in the La Paz region. So
awesome.
Yeah. So we now have Surfaid working in Baja, as well as all over the Indonesian archipelago.
Amazing. How was your time at Surf Ranch?
It was crazy. It was good. I was the announcer, so I spent all my time on the microphone talking everyone's wave and talking about Surfaid, and it was just a big, fun time.
Who was surfing?
Just all the donors, the guys that raised money, the guys that raised the $200,000. The idea was, it was a Surfaid Cup, so the idea was you raise money and then you get to surf. So if you raised $5,000, you got to be in the event.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Who surfed well? Who won? Is there a winner at the event?
No, this particular one, we didn't want to eliminate people. We wanted people to have as much time in the water at the Surf Ranch as possible. So it was like a non-elimination type of format. And we did have judges. Johnny Norris from the LA Ventura area and some other guys did a great job. But the judging was just like who had the best way or best barrel, who had the best right, who was the most, you know, who had the best wipeout, just kind of like random categories. And like best overall performance. So just a bunch of guys. I don't think you would know any of these, yeah. the names of these guys. They were just guys that saw it in their heart to raise some money for Surf Aid. And then in so doing, got to ride the waves at the Surf Ranch. I mean, they were stoked. I mean, you know how it is, Dave. When you're there at that thing and it's the first time you go through that, those gates open for you and you drive in. And it's just, whoa, here we are. It's Disneyland for surfing. And frankly, I think it's around $50,000 or $60,000 to rent that thing for the day. Do you know the exact price?
I heard 50.
I think it's 50.
I might have heard 55.
Yeah, maybe it's right, 55. Right, it might depend on the weekend or whatever. But for 50 grand, as I sat there, and I didn't get to surf, I didn't get to ride, which is fine because I was doing my service for the nonprofit that I work with. But and I've surfed there before. But for 50 grand a day, I think it's well worth it. Like, I think you can get 10 guys to pay $5,000 each. You're going to get 12 waves guaranteed from the top to the, you know how we get to take off from the top?
So there's
six rights, six lefts.
There's guaranteed. 60 waves in the day. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
No, 120. There's 10 guys. You get 12 waves.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha.
Right? And that's without poaching. You know, so like I would invite you knowing that you would probably fall a bunch and then I'd get to poach a bunch of waves. You would invite me knowing that I'm going to fall a lot.
You didn't fall at all.
No, I did fall. I did fall. We're going to invite Sam. You look like a guy who would fall. Oh, you got $5,000? Yeah. You're in. See what I mean? You got to kind of like structure your bros. Your bros, like, you don't bring like the B-level pro guy that rips.
Of course, yeah.
You bring the super cool guy with money that is going to be stoked anyway.
Yeah.
And then my point is you can get 20 waves. You can get your 12 and you can probably poach 8.
I want to bring a guy who's going to gas out after 5 waves.
That's just going to drink beers?
Yeah, exactly. He ends up in
We're going to give him beers. Like when you show up, you're just like, have a beer.
He starts sabotaging people early in the trip.
And that's why surfers are the worst, because our self-centered nature just like takes over and we just get so frothy and lame.
Yeah. You're also the guy who forgets your wallet, so you don't have the $5,000 on the spot. You got to borrow that too.
Oh, I don't know if that's going to go down. But I'll tell you what, as you know, because you were there for the event, the Founders Cup, or no, the first event of the last year's Surf Freshwater Pro. Pro or whatever. Yeah. Surf Ranch Pro. The customer service of that place is insane. Like the people that work there are top notch. They totally take care of you. The food's ridiculous. Super killer healthy. It's always there for you. If you need anything, you just raise your hand and they come and help you out. The concierge type service. It's just the lifeguards are super cool. The whole thing is top notch, like top shelf country club. So for $5,000, if you're going to get guaranteed 12 long killer waves with the potential for some poaching, and on top of that, you're just relaxing the whole time. When you're not in the water, you're just chilling out and digging it. And you got music going and it's fun. And you're at this venue. It's a totally bitchin' day, right?
Yeah.
And on top of that, it's only a day. Like there's something about not having to spend 10 days, like 24 hours flying to Indo on a boat, blah, 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 you know, in the Japan airport, come back jet lagged for 2 weeks. Like you kind of bang it out. And you can fly there at, you know, in the evening, spend the night in Fresno, drive there, surf all day, and maybe fly home that night.
You could, yeah.
And so that part of it's kind of intriguing in a weird way. You don't get the, like, I'm going to read a book in a hammock for a week vibe, but you bang out a super solid day of surfing. Like, 12 waves is a lot.
$5,000's a lot.
$5,000's a lot. No, I agree. It's a lot. I mean, I'm trying to rationalize it. But I think I could see doing it. Like, I could see, because first of all, it's a bucket list thing, too. Like, dude, you're going to be dead pretty soon. Just go friggin' do it. Like, $5,000's not that much. You know what I mean?
Depends who you are.
I know. It's all relative. $500
$5,000 could be the vacation of a lifetime for a lot of people.
Well, here's the thing. Our demographic, surfers in California, we're just getting wealthier and wealthier, because you can't be a surfer in California and not be wealthy. Like just think about, like, where do you own a home?
I don't.
Where could you buy one?
Inland.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What are the chances of your kid going to be a surfer?
not great.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my point, is that people that are going to be surfer are rich people who own homes along the California coastline. That's just the way it's going to be. In 40 years, it's going to be wealthy people that surf.
Yeah.
What do you think? That's
yes, except there's going to be a bunch of surfers riding wave pools inland too.
Yeah.
Potentially.
They're not going to know how to ride ocean waves.
Yeah.
My point is that there's $5,000 in a generation isn't going to be that much for a 24-year-old that's like basically a trust fund. There's just going to be a bunch of trust fund surfers.
Yeah.
Which they're already are.
Certainly in
it's kind of an interesting way to think about it, though, huh? To think forward about what the demographic's going to look like.
It becomes the equivalent of golf or water polo or lacrosse.
Like horseback riding or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not water polo, proper polo.
It's blue. Yeah. It's blue blood sport.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, amateur golf. Which
is the exact opposite of where it started.
Yeah.
I mean.
No. Yeah. It's like in the trenches of Venice in 1964 or something.
That's not where it started.
Well, my point is it was like you couldn't get much dirtier and grosser than Venice in 1968.
For the first.
Like, it's pretty gross. They're just dropping acid and cutting each other off at Pop Pier or whatever.
I mean, for the
That's pretty, like, low rent.
And it was lower rent than that even. I mean, it was...
Like IB.
People camping out in jungles to do it. Like, it was the vagabonds and the vagrants for decades of the pioneering of surfing. So it would be super bizarre if in the next 50 years, it's only wealthy elite.
What does it say for the health of the oceans if the demographic of the people that live along the coastlines around the world, frankly, because I think everywhere where there's coastline, people are buying up property. Is it a good thing for the health of the oceans that in 100 years, everyone that lives around the ocean is going to have a ton of money? And their interest just in the value of their property is based on the ocean being healthy.
Look, it does. It's not going to change that. Detail won't change the health of the oceans because there will always be people coming from inland to enjoy the ocean.
The massive political force that is a bunch of wealthy people that want to see the oceans healthy. Like,
do they?
I don't know.
Assuming that the people who own homes on the beach are the ones who are surfing, and that's not true.
No. I'm presuming they're the ones that are looking at the ocean going, if it goes away or turns dead, the value of my property would just took a shit.
Do you think so? I think you and I care more about the ocean than the people who live on the sand do.
Well, as soon as it turns brown and hideous and there's dead fish floating around, all of a sudden if you live on the sand, you're like, why did I buy what's up with the land? What's up with the ocean? No. Maybe I'm making a am I reaching?
I don't think it turns acidic and brown, you know,
okay,
for a long time. And I think... Actually, the homeowners on the beach probably don't want people going in the ocean. They probably want it empty. All the tourists that show up and take their parking and leave trash.
I'm not worried about surfers catching waves in front of houses owned by rich people. There's no way no one's stopping me. You know, like.
They're stopping people all over the place. Certainly up California's coastline.
Where? Where are they stopping people?
Malibu, Santa Barbara.
No, there's no one's stopping anyone from surfing in Malibu.
This is an ongoing conversation that comes up in the news every once a year about somebody blocking access to the beach.
Yeah, but it goes to the Supreme Court and they win. Like, there's tons of access to the beach in Malibu.
Across the California coast, yes, winning. Almost all of is accessible, but this becomes a point of contention once a year somewhere. In
some rich dick.
Yeah, exactly.
But for the most part, look, there's massive quantities
of course,
accessibility along the coastline.
Completely.
It's in the Coastal Commission charter that it has to be.
Yeah.
So you're wrong.
I don't even know what we're arguing about.
I don't either. Shut up. God. Thanks, Kelly.
I can't wait for the sympathy emails I get after this one.
Oh, my God. So I have a kook or a duke.
Oh, wow. Back to the olden days.
Well, when they come. You know what I mean? So my kook is Wade Carmichael for bailing his board in that heat. He was in the semifinals. John Florence, was it the quarters maybe or the semis? But John Florence had been injured, and he came in, and Wade needed a 6.1 with 10 minutes left.
He caught
a crappy wave and kicked out, and he had like 4 minutes left, and he paddled out there, and a set came, and he bailed his board. And so this is what's interesting. When he bailed his board, I go, what a kook. His board could break right now. 30 seconds later, he comes up, his board's broken from bailing his board.
Yeah.
That was a huge mistake. By the way, I love Wade Carmichael surfing. I'm sure he's a great guy. What a bloke. But he's my duke, I mean my kook, for bailing his board with 4 minutes left instead of just duck diving. Now, I know it was a huge, massive 8-foot set wave at a beach break. But everyone knew that. And you know the consequences. That was a board-breaking wave. You got to hold on to it. It's not breaking if you hold on to it.
It's a good call. He did really botch opportunity there. He had opportunities there to close out that heat with John not being in the water, and he did not capitalize on him. And he's usually such a reliable competitor. You know, he's like a work. He just doesn't really get flustered. He always does the job. So it was surprising. It's a good call. Stand by it.
My Duke is Jackson Dorian, Shane Dorian's kid. Also sort of my must-see moment. I don't know if you watched the massive error that he pulled at the BSR wave run in Waco, the rotation.
Yeah.
That looked sort of Italo and who's the guy that was?
Felipe.
It had that kind of spin on it.
Yeah.
It was just like buttery.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my Duke as well as my spy optic must-see moment. Go on to Jackson Dorian or Shane Dorian's Instagram and take a look at Jackson Dorian doing this pretty fast and just like well-transitioned aerial.
Yeah. He's an impressive kid.
It's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out, huh?
What do you mean?
Jackson Dorian as a pro surfer?
I don't think it's as fraught with peril as other child celebrities are.
I would agree with that.
Like, because Shane is so... just centered. Normal.
Yeah.
Just as normal as the day is long. And like, seems like a great father. Doesn't seem to be imposing anything on Jackson.
Yeah.
Like Jackson's just
doing an amped kid. Stoked.
Yeah. They seem to really have it figured out. And I think obviously parenting is the direct reason for kids' success or lack thereof in that type of environment or scenario. My Duke is Stab Magazine for their Grom Girl division at Stab High this weekend. Have you seen this?
No.
Grom Girls, like literally 10, 12-year-old girls that they're putting in the event in an air show. And in all the, you know, advertising for the event, they're showing these girls do legit airs. Yeah. Kind of akin to Jackson's, to be honest. Like, I'm super impressed. These girls are doing crazier airs than we're seeing the women on the world tour doing. And they're 10 years old.
Gnarly.
So Stab Mag put together a list of those girls, and they're giving them their own event at the Stab High at BSR Cable Park this weekend.
Have you bought your tickets?
No.
Are you going to watch online? Is it free to watch online, or are they charging?
Last year I paid $10 to watch it, and it was well worth it. Yes, I am going to. I've got a.
Do you have to pay to watch it?
I don't know. Last year I had to. Okay. I think this year you might have to as well. But yeah, I've got a dinner party on Saturday night, so I have to spend the whole day in the kitchen on Saturday.
What are you making?
I think fish and veg, probably.
Yeah. Can you go deeper than that? What type of fish? What kind of veg?
So I'll get a white fish. I always buy it at Costco, and depending on what they have, sometimes it's opa. Last time it was ling cod. Just depends on the given week. And going to do like
bake it?
I do a macadamia nut crust and bake it.
You crust it
just one side, just the top side,
and then you bake it at 350 for like 8 minutes or something
longer than that. So last time sometimes I do pesto, other times I did mac nut, and then I realized pesto has nuts in it and it has parm, which you mix with the mac nut.
Pine nuts.
Normally you do pine nuts, so let's forget about the pine nuts. Let's throw the mac nuts and the parm in the pesto. So it's like a pesto, mac nut. It's
basil, mac nut, parm. What else is in pesto?
Olive oil, garlic.
Olive oil and garlic.
Yeah. So that becomes the crust and it browns. And then a beurre blanc sauce underneath. Little onion, lemon confit on the side. And I'm not sure what the third vegetable is going to be. You said you wanted to go deep.
Wow, bro.
You want to go deep?
You did good. What time should I be there?
I'll send you your invite in the mail.
Okay, fair enough.
Wait for it.
Snail mail.
Yep. Wait by the mailbox.
And you have a kook?
No. I'm going to co-sign your kook.
Okay. The Switchfoot Pro-Am is this weekend.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Wow, big weekend.
I will be one of the announcers on the beach.
Moonlight announcing beach. The surf?
Yeah, they have like a Rob Machado like Grom thing, and then they have the Switchfoot thing where you have to take off and go Switchfoot.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool because the guys in Switchfoot are good surfers, and so they're in it. And they have this like fun event where there's like jousting, you know, where they all dress up and they have this like jousting pole with pillows on it and they beat the shit out of each other on the wave.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah. It looks like an amazing event. So are you transitioning into a commentator position as your career path?
I'm not getting paid for anything. I'm just volunteering my services to the community. Yeah.
But that's the first step to getting paid. I think you just go do something that you love for free for a while and then you start getting job offers.
Seems like I just keep getting free gigs.
Nobody's actually willing to pay you yet.
I guess not. I must not be hitting home runs.
Or the people who write the paychecks don't know that you're doing it yet. Is the WSL aware? Is this even a career path interest for you?
Maybe. Everything's of interest to me from a career path standpoint.
Everything.
I mean, you know, like within reason. I'm not going to be selling myself on the street corner.
Which asset would you be selling?
Which are you interested in? Oh Lord, we
trying to save up that $5,000 one.
Yeah, you know you gotta get
one,
your $5,000.
One trick at a
however
time.
You can get it. Exactly, I'm the one trick pony. I'm going to the Wave Ranch more than once.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Shout out, by the way, Florida Surf Film Festival.
How was that? Oh,
I mean, epic, dude.
Really?
Epic. They do such a killer job.
By sea.
Yeah, we saw exactly the.
I've actually been asked to announce one of those showings.
See, look August. At you. You got I just work remember. Lining up.
It's all free. Right. They're like, will you moderate a panel? I'm like, okay.
With who?
Probably with Damien and some other guys. It's for the. It's a fundraiser for the Boys to Men Mentoring Program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the Florida Surf Film Festival, first of all, that was the main film that they were screening that night. But they have a couple of shorts, and then they had another like hour-long film from this 21-year-old Hawaiian kid who made a feature-length surf film on his iPhone, basically. And he lives in his van using Starbucks Wi-Fi to edit, you know, every day. And the film... What are you laughing at?
I'm just imagining this guy just... Go ahead. Just...
No, you go ahead. No, yours is going to be better than mine.
I love this guy. I'm stoked for this guy. I can just see him in there like all day long in Starbucks. I can see the barista going, God, how do we get this guy out of here? He's been here all day.
They're not allowed to kick him out anymore.
Really?
Yeah, they implemented a policy. They have to let you use their restroom, even if you're not buying anything.
Wow, because there's like homeless. There's a homeless guy I've noticed at the Starbucks in Cardiff. And yeah. I'm like, God, how come they don't kick this guy out?
Because remember in Philadelphia, like 2 years ago, there was some black teens that came in to wait for a buddy. And the manager was like, if you're not going to buy anything, you can't be here. And then it turned into this racial thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then they just implemented a blanket policy.
So a surf movie came of this whole thing. This is insane. Who would have
Chris
thought?
Miyashiro is the guy's name. And he just made this beautiful film, you know, like, and
it, why was it beautiful?
It was whimsical and captured all the, you know, the
you're
romance.
That like you don't believe it.
No, I'm saying it because you are condescending in your assessment of me
sure
just giving beautiful. A flippant like.
Okay.
So
I'm stoked on Chris.
Look,
I'm not
I have
here
criticism.
To shoot down Chris. I just want to know
look,
why you thought it was wonderful.
I have criticism about the film as well. Like, if I'm going to put my critic hat on.
Please
it was
do.
Way,
that's what you are.
No, because he's a 21-year-old kid who made it with zero budget. Like, and so I'm looking at it as nobody forced. I didn't pay for this. Nobody forced me to right. watch it. I sat down and I'm looking at this 21-year-old kid using his iPhone and I only see the good in it.
Right.
And the good is it captured all the whimsy of the sojourn, you know, the journeying of a surfer just traveling the world with no budget and catching waves with friends and running into people. And it was really beautifully put together. Like the transitions from one scene to the other, he did all the artwork himself, which was like hand cut, cut out like pieces of paper and create like a collage and then film the collage and like move the camera along the map. You know, because he probably didn't know how to do graphic design work
yeah.
in whatever Adobe software you need.
Yeah.
So like little elements like that were whimsical and he scored it with a friend and did the narration. He got a local kid in on Oahu, like a 12-year-old kid, to do the narration for him. That element was amazing.
I was available.
I don't think he knew. So like elements like that where you're like, okay, this filmmaker has a real skill set.
So it was so sincere that it was charming.
And it was well done.
So, and he traveled the world.
He went to Thailand and then Joshua Tree to shoot a bunch of B-roll stuff. So my point is, this first film, you would have criticism of if you paid for it and I didn't give you all that backstory. If you just watched it as it ends up on Netflix one day, you'd be like, oh, it's too long and it gets boring at parts or whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this guy has talent. Right. Like, he's an artist and he's really good at what he does. It'll be interesting to see his second project. It'll be interesting to see his fourth and fifth project. And I remember being at the first one at the Florida Surf Film Festival, who does this killer job curating.
Yes.
The wheat from the chaff, you know? Mm-hmm. And they do a great job of pulling community together. They sell out the event every single time. So I was psyched to be there. And then, of course, to connect with Justin Purser, who is the director of the Hobgood documentary, and then see the Hobgoods. And I recorded a chat with the doc, with all of them, and I'll post that as a podcast in the coming whatever.
What other films were stood out?
Is
there anything where you would go, Scott would have liked this?
The Hobgood doc you'll like for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
But yeah, good to connect with podcast fans out there and all that sort of stuff too. Not a good thing to go to Florida in June though.
It's kind of muggy. Is that what it was?
It's a bit muggy.
It's thick, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. But I'm glad you had a good time. And I'm a fan of the Florida Surf Film Festival.
Yeah.
And the fireman that puts it on.
Yeah. Fireman and an accountant.
Good stuff.
Combo.
And a surfer. Hardcore surfer.
Both of them are surfers. And then it was Father's Day weekend that they hosted it. So my dad actually flew out with me to do that.
Oh,
and then
that's very cool.
Then we road tripped it.
That's pretty cool.
Augustine, went to Savannah.
Savannah?
Yeah.
I have relatives in Savannah.
Do you really?
I do.
Have you been?
I have.
What do you think?
I think it's a southern city. It's pretty southern.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do you like
it? Trees with the
Spanish moss.
Yeah, the moss. My grandmother lived there and my aunt still lives there. And I mean, my experiences there were when I was 5 years old.
Oh, okay.
I haven't been there in a while, but, it was pretty southern, especially at my grandmother's house.
Like you're using southern as a pejorative.
I am.
Yeah. I love it. So, I mean, as I've gotten older, have a real reverence for Americana.
I love it.
And like history.
Yes.
You know, going to like these forts that is the very first spot.
I love
the
that
The very
stuff.
First shot of the Civil War was fired, you
I
know, and stuff
so
like that.
So love that shit.
Yeah, it's so good. And people are just so, America is so diverse. You know, like people in the South are culturally more different than Australians from Southern Californians.
Totally.
You know? Totally. So all of that stuff I really love. And
it's like fascinating. You know, you and I travel internationally, and I have not done enough travel within the continental United States.
Yeah.
And it's a fascinating thing. By the way, speaking of history, have you listened to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History? The episode is Destroyer of the Worlds.
No, I haven't. Listened to the show, but not that episode.
That episode's so good. It's a blitz, you know, the small ones.
Yeah.
But it's 5 hours long. There's supposed to be an hour of these blitzes, and he's like, oh, sorry, but this one's 5 hours long. And it's about the atomic age. Basically, it starts with Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And all of the politics and the political will and the drama and the war, starting with Oppenheimer and the Manhattan Project, all the way through Truman and FDR and Truman and Eisenhower and JFK and the Bay of Pigs and the Khrushchev and all of, you know, the Cuban Missile. It's so friggin' rad. It's so good.
Okay, cool. I read Oppenheimer's biography years ago, and it was a little bit tedious, but it was fascinating. Like the cultural context was all interesting, you know.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Cool, I'll check it. Corona Open J-Bay starts July 9th. So you and I will see each other that week before the event starts.
Yes.
And we'll bang out another episode of Spit.
Yeah, I'm killing it on my fantasy surf team. I'm beating the crap out of you. It's been a great season for me this year, just beating David Lee Scales in an all fantasy surfer.
I haven't even played fantasy surfer in 2 or 3 years.
Which is why I'm kicking your butt.
But I remember last time we played that I did reign supreme, so I'm living on that.
I don't think that's the case, but whatever. Until next time, adios and aloha.
Cold.